on today's Run to the Top podcast.
We put so much pressure on ourselves before big races, but at the end of the day, your friends and your family and your teammates, what they care about is that you're happy and that you're fulfilling your passion. They don't care about the time on the clock. Once you really realize that, you can relax a little bit, and that's sort of when the best results come.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome to Run to the Top. I am Stephanie K. Atwood, coach, Boston Marathon qualifier, and your host of this fun and informative weekly podcast all about running. Today, I am interviewing Runners Connect coach Laura McLean. Laura's background is at the elite level of hockey, in addition to running cross country and track. Laura coaches Runners Connect clients online and, I know, has some great information to share with all of us. I'll tell you a bit more about Laura, but first I have a question for you. Do you have a story you would like to share on this podcast, or do you know someone who has a story to share? Run to the Top podcast features regular people and professionals. Anything to do with running works. So please contact us at runnersconnect.net, our website, and use the contact information to get in touch. Many of our interviews have actually come through your suggestions. Please get in touch with us through the runnersconnect.net website. Who knows, you may be our next featured interview. So back to Laura McLean, coach, former elite hockey athlete, and current avid fan and contributor to the running community. Currently, Laura, who lives in Toronto, Canada, is certified as an endurance club coach and as coach for athletes with disabilities. She is the coaching coordinator in her local club, the Longboat Roadrunners, based out of Toronto, and an assistant coach with the Ryerson University Cross Country Program. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, Stephanie. I'm so glad to be here today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it should be fun. So let's begin with the four basic questions that I always ask. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
Okay, I am 30 years old. I live in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and I was born in a town about 40 minutes outside of Toronto called Ajax, and I grew up in Oshawa, Ontario. My favorite distance, I guess, would be the half marathon or the marathon. I've had more bad marathons than good marathons, but that seems to be the way that it goes sometimes. But I do love the challenge of it, and the good ones, the reward seems to outweigh the not so good ones.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing you say, because so much more effort goes into training for a marathon than a half marathon. I'm sure at elite level that might not be the case, but for most of us, it's just a half marathon really fits much easier into the schedule. But those marathons, boy, there are just so many ways they can go wrong.
Yeah, that's right. You work so hard for 4 or 6 months, and something can happen on the day that's out of your control, and you really only have usually one shot at it, half a year or two shots a year, that should be. It's hard, but I appreciate that you have to put in that work and then see what happens on that day.
Indeed. Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how running came into your life.
So I ran when I was in high school. My brother was actually a very good runner, and he was a Canadian record holder on the junior level. So I grew up thinking that running was just the coolest thing ever because my big brother did it. So when I went to high school, I joined the cross country and track team. I was playing hockey at the same time. So come about grade 11, I had to make a decision of which one I would focus on to participate in at the university level. And I chose hockey. So I played my first and second year, but I had some injury problems with mostly concussions. And I got to the point where I couldn't play hockey anymore.
Wow.
So after that, I took a few years of, this is my early 20s, not really doing any sports and maybe partying a little bit more than I should have. And I got to a point where I thought, maybe I'll give running a try again. And it felt completely different than running did at the high school level. And mm-hmm. I just felt, you know, so free. I was balancing a career and it was me time. And I found that really important. And it's just kind of developed from there.
So did you run as a young kid too? I mean, was that part of what you grew up with, or was it really not until you got into high school?
No, I ran in elementary school. In Ontario, the province I live in, you can start cross country in grade 2. Mm-hmm. And I remember I won my first cross country meet at the elementary school level.
Wow.
And I like to joke that it kind of all went downhill from there because that's a good spot to start when you win. You know, there's not much more that you can do for that.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about it that way. Wow. Okay, so you are talking ice hockey, I'm sure, correct?
Ice hockey, yes.
Yeah, well, the Canadians, of course, just assume that it's ice hockey. And I don't know if Americans do in general or not, because we don't have as much ice as you have up there.
That's true, yeah. I'm not used to separating if it's, you know, ice hockey or field hockey. I did play ball hockey as well, which is indoors. On the ice is taken out of the rink and you just play on the cement with those orange balls.
Wow.
I played quite a bit of that, and that's a pretty tough sport, but it's quite a bit of fun.
I bet. Well, I think you have to be pretty tough to be competitive in ice hockey. What was it like to be an elite athlete in that field, and what did a typical day look like for you?
So there is a big change from competing and playing at sort of the regional and provincial level and then moving to the university level. I stayed here in Ontario and played for York University, which is it's called U Sports now. It used to be called CIS. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of our Canadian university league. So it was different. We were on the ice about 2 hours a day, mm-hmm. and then in the gym for cross training, maybe an hour a day, four times a week. And then on the weekends, we traveled a lot by bus to go play our road games, or we hosted home games. So it was a lot to balance with the school load. But I think that helps. I think being a student athlete is tremendously important for people who have the ability to do that, because it does help you balance out your life when you move away from sport or start a family or what have you later on in life.
Yeah. Now, elite athletes have a very constricted, structured life. Were you paid? Did you have sponsors? These are all questions that I'm interested in. And how much time did you go this route? It sounds like your career was ended early because of injury, but can you answer some of those questions for me?
Yeah, I wasn't paid. We, similar to in the US, student athletes can't be paid for their sport. Mm-hmm. And there isn't a ton of money in women's hockey. Unfortunately, it's not like men's hockey. We did have, you know, the schools have a partnership with brands. We were partnered with Nike Bauer. So we had all of our equipment was paid for, all of our sticks were paid for, that sort of thing. But I didn't have any individual sponsors as a hockey player. I was never quite there. I was never national team material.
Yeah.
So that was never something that was even on my radar at that time.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you go for with being an elite hockey player?
So I stopped after second year university. So I would have been 20, 21 years old. While now since I stopped playing.
Yeah. You kind of explained this a little earlier, but the transition into running, how did that actually come? Were you kind of burned out from the competition of hockey? Because it sounds like there was a bit of time where you didn't do much of anything athletic. And what, you know, what brought you back into running? And at this level, it sounds to me like you're running mostly because you love it and not because you're an elite athlete or you're competing a whole lot.
Yeah. So when I stopped playing hockey, I think burnt out is a good way to put it. I mean, I'd had concussions are serious injuries, and they're getting more recognition for their seriousness now than they even were 10 years ago. And I wasn't ready to do any more sport. I had been playing sports since I was 6 years old, and that was sort of all that I knew. So I tried to branch away from that. And then I guess really it was the love of being active. I just, one day it was a nice day and I thought, I want to go for a run. So I went for a run and I worked up from there. Within about a year and a half, I'd run my first marathon, and then you're on the typical, I qualified for Boston and all of that sort of thing.
So it sounds to me like you just love being outdoors and love being physical.
Yeah, I do. I mean, when I'm not running or not coaching, I'm camping quite a bit and doing some backpacking. So I find just moving and being outside, really, it increases my happiness. And that makes me a more pleasant person to be around for the people in my life that matter to me.
Understood. So how are hockey training and run training similar, and how are they different, especially the way you're handling it, which obviously is different levels of the two sports?
They're similar because they both can be, hockey is obviously a team sport. Running is primarily individual, especially when you're an adult recreational runner. But if you join a club, you're part of a club, you still have that team atmosphere. And playing at the university level, you're part of a team, you're a piece of the puzzle, but you also have to do your individual part and show, you know, if you're not practicing well and you're not playing well, you're not getting dressed for the games and you're sitting in the stands. So there is still that individual level of needing to elevate yourself every day to be the best athlete that you can be. Mm-hmm. And I think I've pulled that over to running. I want to get the most out of myself every time that I put on my shoes or go to the gym.
Talk about your club. You have a club that you run with, and then you also are involved with cross country with another group of runners, right?
Yeah. So I am part of the Longboat Roadrunners. Mm-hmm. We are a club in Toronto. We are formed in 1980, and we're named after the legendary Indigenous Canadian marathoner, Tom Longboat, who he won Boston Marathon. He was a foot runner in, I believe it was World War One. And he's just one of the most notable Canadian marathoners to have existed. So our club is a tribute to him. We have about 160 members, and we range in age from, we have a few teens, early 20s, to we have a few gentlemen in their 80s. So we cover a lot of bases.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how do your training workouts work when you get together? Is it very informal, or is there some structure to it as far as how far you're running that day and that kind of thing?
There's a good mix. We have people who just show up and run, and it's very social for them. Mm-hmm. And then we have our coached athletes who, as coaching coordinator, I oversee. And we run structured workouts. Everybody has the workouts ahead of time. And if it's the long run on Sunday mornings, I publish on the Friday afternoon what the route is going to be so everybody can know it ahead of time.
Nice.
So it is a fair mix for, I like to say that we have a little bit of everything for everybody's needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an important part of the success of a club, to have some structure, but also to have it open for as many people as want to be involved and still work for them. So you are certified as an endurance coach, running coach, as well as working with disabled athletes, or is it just disabilities in general? How does that part fit in?
So that was really just a course that I took. I'm actually... In Canada, we have NCCP, which is kind of the overseeing body for coaching, and I think it's 60 sports. So they got all of the sport organizations together and said, let's set out a structure for how we are going to oversee our coaches. Mm-hmm. And that's the NCCP program. And there is a difference between being NCC trained and NCC certified.
Okay.
So I'm trained and I'm working on my certification, which is just really a matter of somebody coming out and watching me organize a practice.
Okay.
And to be honest, I haven't gotten around to setting that up. So I'm NCCP trained in club coach endurance. And then I also took the coaching athletes with disabilities course, because it's really important to me that sport is available to everyone.
Totally.
And accessible. Yeah. And I wanted to see how NCCP views accessibility for different needs. So that was just sort of out of general interest that I took that course.
And how, what did you learn from that that might be worth sharing with us? That it, that seems to me like a lot of times we as athletes don't think about that. You don't have to have everything working perfectly to still be athletic and want to participate and even compete.
Yeah. And I mean, I've done, it's almost as if it's a sensitivity training course. And it's really the main message that seemed to get across was, you know, people with disabilities are people and everybody is a person. And there's a big push to kind of get away from looking at somebody with a disability and saying, you know, they're so inspirational for living like this. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really an important framework of they're doing their thing and participating in sport because they love it.
Right.
And if you find inspiration in that, that's fine, but you can't limit them to being, you know, an inspirational poster.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest takeaway. And I think that that's something really important. And again, something that's coming along more with sport with time and catching up to where we are as opposed to where we used to be.
Right. I love that. Okay. So running questions, what, you are now an online coach with Runners Connect. And, what are some common questions that you deal with as a running coach, both online and also with the, you know, with the groups that you're working with, in the field?
Oh, geez. The biggest question that I get, and I think every coach gets, is can I run my easy runs faster? everyone wants to run their easy run as fast as they can because running fast feels good. Uh-huh. So I get that question a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. And of course, the answer is, I know it's not necessarily that fun, but if you slow down, you'll be able to run faster in your workouts and be prepared for them and then run faster in your races. So I get that question a whole lot.
Okay. And we got the answer too. That's good. Yeah. So how about some other common questions?
Common questions. We got a lot of questions on Runners Connect about injuries, which are really valid questions. And I think that we do a good job of assisting runners between what their doctors and physiotherapists tell them and then making that practical in their training plan and adjusting their training plans for that. That's something that I tend to oversee a lot of. I'm not a physical therapist, and there's sort of a disconnect with online coaching with if you're saying something hurts and finding out what that actual injury is. So a lot of times the physical therapist may not be a runner themselves. So we're able to, you know, go see your PT or go see your doctor and get a diagnosis, and then we'll modify your training plan for you or modify, you know, from running to cross training. And I find that we do that a lot. And I think that that's something that we do really successfully that's difficult to do as an athlete on your own.
Talk about cross training, because that's such an important part of running. And again, it's one of those things that a lot of us just don't necessarily, you know, put enough credence to.
So cross training, you know, it can be anything from like supplemental cardio work, like swimming or the bike or elliptical. It's also doing your strength training and your mobility exercises and your drills. I am sometimes a do as I say, not as I do coach, because I might slack off here and then on the cross training. But I do firmly believe in it as a practice. And I think it's something that the Runners Connect community has really picked up on, and they're actually very good at doing their cross training work that we give them.
So let's just talk theoretically then. What kind of cross training do you think is good, is ideal, is at least acceptable for most of us training for something on a kind of a regular basis? What kind of picture would the cross training have in that training program?
So I think just basic strength training and body weight work is something that everyone can do. You don't need a gym membership to do it. Mm-hmm. And doing cross training work on a single leg is really important, because when you're running, you're always, when you're touching the ground, it's 1 foot at a time, not 2 foot at a time.
Right.
So doing that single leg strength training is really important, be that like single leg squats or balancing work on that, on your one leg at a time, is kind of the key stuff that I like to see runners do. And like I said, it is accessible. You can do that from home. You don't need a lot of equipment to do it.
Yeah. Well, really good point. The whole idea of being able to use one leg at a time. I guess, again, a lot of us don't think about that. You know, we're just kind of thinking that our feet are moving, and not that there's only, when we're running well, there's only 1 foot on the ground at a time.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're involved in the gym scene, there are sort of the glamorous exercises like Olympic lifts and doing squats with really heavy weight. And don't get me wrong, there is definitely value in that, but there are things that I think if you're on a tight timeline can be more beneficial running wise. And the number one would be working on that strength and balance and mobility one leg at a time.
And how many days a week would you think strength training or cross training would be good?
I think a minimum of 3 days is good. That's a starting point. I definitely don't think that it's something that people have to do every single day. And when a lot of people hear about coaches wanting to add cross training, they think, well, I'm already running 4, 5, 6 days a week. Like, how am I going to fit that in?
Right.
And if you can fit in your 15 minutes, half an hour, three times a week, you'll find that it's not actually that much more.
Yeah.
And you do have the time for it.
Yeah. And it also adds to the total workout for the day, which is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, actually, that brings me to rest, because that's such an important factor in a good training program. And what do you tell your clients about rest?
I tend to say, if you feel like you need a rest day, to take it. I'm big on listening to your body, and I feel like we're in a place right now where we're so tuned in with the technology and data that we have available to us that sometimes we listen more to what our watch or our heart rate monitor says than what we feel.
Yeah.
So I like runners to really tune into what they're feeling. And if you need a day off or if you need 2 days off, we can always adjust your program and be flexible to that, because you need that rest. That is an important part of your training.
Well, the rest is really where you improve, right? The rest is where change is made, and theoretically anyway, we're getting better by resting fatigued muscles and fatigued mental capacity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And let's talk about cadence and also stretching. I know they're different things, but I wrote those down because I think they're also both part of most training programs. And how do you deal with both of those?
That's actually, cadence is something I could have said when you're asking about questions that we got a lot, because I do find it's one of those pieces of data that we now have readily available to us through our watches.
Yeah.
And it's something that I personally think it's great to be mindful of, but not necessarily something that you need to obsess over. You know, there are numbers that float out there, you know, of average, like 180 strides per minute. And that's great. But at the same time, that's an average and everybody is different. So to say I need to hit this number that I read online might not be the most important thing to focus on. Sometimes I like to tell people, be mindful of it, but just get out there and enjoy your run, and the improvements will come, and your cadence will increase the more that you run.
And the landing light, that's something I talk about, that if you're not actually counting how many steps you're taking, but you're trying to land lighter on your foot, that is going to tend to make your cadence a little higher. Do you agree?
I do. I think that, and it will also sort of limit that contact time that you have. Mm-hmm. So your legs will be spinning faster, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. Okay, stretching. I know we're just kind of going through these things pretty generally, but as an online coach with talking to a large group of listeners for this podcast, you really do have to keep it pretty generic.
Yeah. So stretching is one of those things where you find people either do it or they don't do it. And it's pretty hard to change people out of their ways. and I say that as I'm not a stretcher. I probably should be. But I'll do the odd, you know, leg swings and mobility that way after a good warm up before a workout. Uh-huh. I'm not the person that's sitting on their yoga mat before bed every night. So I like to tell people if you want to stretch, go ahead and stretch. And there are coaches that will say, don't worry about it. There are coaches that will say, you absolutely must do it. I think it really does depend on the person and the athlete, what works best for them. In a perfect world, yes, we should all do it. In the world we live in, I'm not sure how often people are doing it when we tell them to.
you sound like a realistic and pragmatic coach. Now, stretching actually does have different formats too. A before training stretch might be dramatically different than an after training stretch. So can you elaborate a little bit on those two aspects of stretching?
Yeah, so I think what I like to see runners do, and this is something that I push with the university level athletes that I coach, is they'll run from the school to where we meet for our workout, and it's about 2 kilometers to get there. So they'll run there and then they'll do their drills, their A skips and B skips and leg swings, and then they'll do some dynamic stretching. Mm-hmm. And then they'll jog a bit more. We'll get into sort of the meat of the workout.
Right.
And then they'll do some static stretching afterwards. Uh-huh. And then jog back to the school and maybe do a bit more stretching there. So I like to see that little bit of a warm up, get the muscles moving and warm,
mm-hmm.
get some static some dynamic stretching in, do the workout, and then the static stuff kind of afterwards as you're easing back down.
Right. Okay. That sounds like what I'm used to advising, and also what my experience has been seems to work the best. Talk about the online coaching program at Runners Connect and how it actually works. So if our listeners are interested in being involved in it, what does that look like?
So we have a few different options. The most popular is sort of a team coaching. There are 4 main coaches that will help you out. And it's myself, Dylan, Haley, and Claire. Mm-hmm. And I'm the newest of the coaches, actually. I only started in November and it is the beginning of May now. So I'm relatively new to the Runners Connect coaching.
Uh-huh.
But what will happen is somebody will sign up and they'll fill out sort of, it's an interview, but it's a questionnaire. It's about who you are, how much you run, what your history is, your recent races. And we'll take that and we will write you a program.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this, our own website that you log into and you see your program and you're able to upload your results straight from your watch or from Strava, whatever app you're using to track yourself. And then one of the 4 coaches will see that and will comment on it. And the other runners in the community, unless you mark it as private, the other runners in the community can see it and comment on it too. So you really have this team aspect.
Nice.
But you have people from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like a social media platform that's specifically to your running. And I've seen some really beautiful relationships and friendships and support.
Nice.
Over the months that I've been there.
Yeah.
Between the coaches and the athletes, but the athletes and themselves.
Wow.
So we do have private coaching as well,
mm-hmm.
where you just have one coach that focuses on you.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of us have sort of this team of coaches that bring all of their experiences and different viewpoints to your training. And I think that that's really successful, that you can have coaches with all these 4 coaches with different backgrounds come to you and say, you know, you're having this problem. I had a similar problem, or Coach Claire had a similar problem, and they can chime in and really help you out with your training.
Yeah. Now, I would suspect that that kind of coaching is a little less expensive than the one-on-one as well. Is that the case?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So those are both options that people could look into through Runners Connect. And I think it's online coaching just has so many benefits in so many ways. So I'm glad to hear a little bit more about it. Let's move on to you yourself individually. What aspects of running are challenges for you, or how would you like to see improvement in your own running?
So I am I'm not one of those runners that gets injured a lot. I've never had a stress fracture. I've never had shin splints. Like, I've never had the typical running injuries. But right now I am dealing with maybe overtraining. There's something called relative energy deficiency syndrome. It used to be known as female athlete triad.
Oh, okay.
And I'm experiencing that right now. So I've actually had to take a step back from my training and focus on getting healthy. And that's something that I probably should have done a year ago. You know, my performances were decreasing and I just mentally, I wasn't ready to take a break. So I think taking that break was the hardest point. And I had a bunch of bad workouts and a bunch of bad races. And I was at the track one day this March and I just couldn't do my workout. And one of the other coaches in my club was there and we looked at each other and I said, I think I'm done for now. And he's like, I think that's the right call. So for me right now, my biggest struggle is going to be digging myself out of this hole that I'm in and then getting back to the level that I was at. And I think just taking a step back and not running until I get healthy is absolutely the best training decision I can make right now.
Absolutely.
But it is also kind of a hard decision when running. It's not only, you know, I'm a coach by career and it's something I love. It's my passion. So it has been a little bit challenging and there's a big marathon here. Two marathons recently, this last weekend that all my teammates and the athletes I coach in Toronto ran. So I had a bit of fear of missing out and I'm ready to get back out there mentally, but I'm waiting for my body to catch up too.
Now, is there nutritional differences or nutritional changes that you're making to get yourself back up to performance levels that you were at before?
Yes. So I am, like a lot of runners, I need to raise my ferritin levels, which is fairly common and something I had been slacking on. I wasn't doing my proper maintenance that I should have been.
Talk about ferritin, because that's a term that not everybody might be familiar with.
So when you are experiencing fatigue, it is one of the biomarkers that your doctor will measure for. And it basically measures your body's capacity to carry iron. So it's sort of one of those first things that doctors look at when iron deficiency may be an issue. There is a wide spectrum, a wide range that they say that is the quote unquote normal ferritin levels.
Right.
And then there's sort of, if you see a sports medicine doctor, there's the levels that they think that athletes should be in. And I fell in the low range of normal, but below what my sports medicine doctor would consider healthy for an athlete.
Okay.
So that's something that I need to work on through diet. So I'm eating more red meat than I would really like to, and I'm also taking an iron supplement. And just by taking time off, I doubled my ferritin level in 3 weeks.
Wow.
By not running and by eating a little bit better, which is most people that doesn't happen. It doubled very quickly. Wow. So I'm very fortunate for that. And then the other thing that's very low for me and is low for a lot of people, and especially Canadians or people in the northern states, is I have very low vitamin D. So that is also something that I'm working on getting up.
Interesting. Now, this ferritin thing, it seems to be more common in women because of their menstrual cycles, from my understanding. I mean, that's part of the reason that women tend to be more prone to this, you know, particular issue than men. Is that true?
From my understanding and research, that is true. That we do, it's kind of back and forth. We lose it through our menstrual cycle. And then if your body is at a point where it's low enough, you may lose your menstrual cycle.
Right.
So it is critical to your reproductive health, and your reproductive health also can deplete it.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. That is really good information. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, this is something that this is the kind of thing that we're trying to learn on this podcast is just things that, you know, affect us as runners, and we don't always have a chance to talk about them. So thanks for sharing that.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah. Now, running idols. Who do you look up to in the running world, or who would you like to emulate?
Oh, geez. I don't know how much time you have for me to list them all off here. I am a big fan of women's sports. So it's so easy to say, you know, Shalane Flanagan, Dizzy Linden, mm-hmm. Mary Catani. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Jenny Simpson fan. I think that she has just had such a remarkable career, and she's such a charismatic athlete. Mm-hmm. I do have to take the time to shout out some of my Canadian running heroes.
Totally.
Krista Duchesne, she just finished third at the Boston Marathon. If you haven't heard of Krista, she has a remarkable story. She's a mom of three. She's a dietitian. She broke her femur in a half marathon and still finished third and came back and qualified for the Rio Olympics. So Krista is just
wow.
My absolute hero.
Wow.
In sport. Yeah.
I think it's really unfortunate that so much of the time the U.S. athletes are given so much credit over others. Now, of course, this must be different in Canada than in the U.S., because I noticed when I was in Mexico spending some time there that the Mexican athletes were showing up a lot more than the U.S. athletes. So, you know, it does have something to do with that. But a lot of the Canadian athletes do not get the recognition they deserve in the U.S., even though we're right next to each other.
Yeah, so, I mean, it makes sense. Nationalism in sport is definitely something we all like to root for the home team, right? But there, on the men's and the women's side in Canada, I think that from the track up to the marathon, there's sort of this new wave coming through. I follow the women's side a little bit more closely, and I think the running community in Canada is really supportive of our elites, and our elites in turn are really supportive of the rest of us, and they're showing up to small races, and cool. They'll run their race, and then they'll cheer for other runners on their cool down. So the Canadian elites are all very accessible, and I think that that's something that's really special in our community. And Athletics Canada is doing, I think, a decent job of promoting their athletes for the rest of us to see and learn who they are and cheer for them.
I'm really interested in talking with Krista. Maybe she'll be available for an interview on Run to the Top.
She is a recommendation that I would give, and I will pass the message along to her, because I think that your fans would absolutely love her story, and she is just such a great person. And she also played hockey at the university level here in Canada.
Oh, really?
Before switching to the marathon. Yeah, I don't want to spoil too much, but she just has a fantastic story and is a great person.
It seems like playing hockey in Canada is kind of part of the growing up ritual.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think soccer probably has higher numbers. It's a little bit more of an accessible sport, uh-huh. But I guess our national identity, I might be a bit of a stereotype that way with the hockey.
Well, we are going to change gears here and move into the final kick. Laura, are you ready for this?
I am. Always ready for a good kick at the end.
Indeed. Okay, so I'm assuming this is going to be somewhere in your neighborhood. What is your favorite local training run? And start by telling us your city again, because, of course, a lot of times we forget by the time we get to this portion in the podcast. Tell us enough that our readers could actually find it when they come to your area, and, you know, if it's safe and how far and where to park and bathrooms and all that kind of stuff.
All right. So I am in Toronto, which is the capital city of Ontario. It is not the capital of Canada, which some people sometimes think, because it's the largest city in Canada. So I live in what I guess would be considered Midtown. Mm-hmm. And there's a really great, it's packed dirt and a little bit of crushed gravel trail that's called the Beltline. And I find a lot of cities tend to have a Beltline trail that is an old rail line. So the rail line used to cut across the city, and the rail line is gone, and they've developed it into a lineal park.
Nice.
So it's my favorite place to run. Mm-hmm. It connects with a couple of other parks. I start off at a park called Cedarvale. And I guess you can park on the street nearby, or there's a private school, St. Mike's, that you can park at. And when I run the Beltline in total from Cedarvale back to Cedarvale, I think it's 16 kilometers or 10 miles.
Okay.
So it's a good loop. It's got water mm-hmm. fountains along the way. Mm-hmm. It's got a great tree canopy in the summertime, and
nice.
It goes down into our ravine. So it's actually sort of like natural air conditioning down there.
Wow.
So that's definitely my favorite spot. And for any listeners from Toronto, if you don't know this already, there is a bathroom in the cemetery, Mount Pleasant Cemetery, that's open year round. It's just a single stall. And there's a water fountain outside of it, and that's a good place to stop mid-run and fill up your water bottle or use the facility if you need to.
Oh, really good information. Now, any safety issues with it? Is it okay to go there early, late? Is it lit? And also, can you run there on your own?
Oh, I run there on my own all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't ever feel a safety concern. Mm-hmm. Parts of it are lit, so it's not the best. It gets very dark at nighttime, mm-hmm. which when you live in a city the size of Toronto, it's kind of rare to find darkness. So it does get dark
uh-huh.
there.
Mm-hmm.
So I've run it at night with a headlamp,
mm-hmm.
but that's not necessarily for everyone. But
yeah.
during the daytime, the biggest danger is people who have their dogs off leash that probably shouldn't. So as far as dangers go, that's not that bad, but it is something that runners experience, is the little dogs jumping around.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah. Okay. Second question here. A running book, a favorite or recommended running book.
So I have read, as I'm sure many of your listeners have read, a ton of running books. My favorite one isn't the most well-known. It's called The Silence of Great Distance. I'm not sure if anybody's ever given that as the answer before. It's by
nope.
an author called Frank Murphy.
Okay.
And it basically talks about the development of women's athletics, but it's told through the story of a runner named Stephanie Herbst,
mm-hmm.
who was a 9-time All-American at the University of Wisconsin in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it basically tells her story of a runner and then connects it back to developing middle and long distance women running from, I think it starts maybe in the early 70s onwards. And it's a very captivating story. Stephanie's story is captivating, but also the women that it talks about it's very interesting. It's almost more of a history book than anything.
I love this segment. It's just so much fun to get information from people, you know, and the diversity, the variety is really amazing. Okay, third one, a tidbit of wisdom, quote, or humor for our runners.
I don't have a quote or any humor, but I like to tell runners that I coach, and this is something I learned the hard way, is not to take yourself too seriously.
Ooh, good one.
And, you know, we put so much pressure on ourselves before big races.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually something that you kind of learn about in the book, is the different pressures that the athletes put on themselves. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you run, you know, a 4-hour marathon, a 3-hour marathon, a 2.5-hour marathon, your friends and your family and your teammates, what they care about is that you're happy and that you're fulfilling your passion.
Right.
They don't care about the time on the clock. And I find that once you really realize that, you can relax a little bit. And that's sort of when the best results come.
I like that. Is there someone or some subject about running that you would be interested in hearing in a future podcast?
Yeah. So I already brought up Krista Duchesne, and she would be my recommendation. It sounds like you haven't had her on.
Yeah.
And I really think that your runners would love to hear her story. She's got a blog if anybody wants to start checking her out. Just a great story of a woman that seems to wear many hats and do it well. And she had that third place finish at Boston. And I think that was just something really cool that happened that day.
Thank you. And Laura, also give us contact information and how our audience can be in touch with you at Runners Connect. And if they are in your neighborhood, how they might be able to join your local running club.
Yeah. So for Runners Connect, my email is laura@runnersconnect.net. That would be the best way to get a hold of me. Or if you're a Runners Connect member, you can always, you know, send me a note on the stream. If you're in Toronto and you want to get together for a run, you can either hook up with Longboat or get in touch with me through Longboat. My club email is on the website under coaching, and we'd love to have anybody out that wants to come out, or I'd love to run with a new person. I love running with new people and having conversations with them. So I'm always up for a run with somebody new.
Thank you, Laura, and thank you, listeners, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Be sure to join us at the Runners Connect Winner's Circle on Facebook at runnersconnect.net/FB. Subscribe to the Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, etc. And Laura McLean, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on board. And thank you, each of you listeners out there. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.